I have a confession.
What's that?
I have not filed my taxes for the last 2 years, I think, since I moved to Berlin.
Taxes. It's an important topic when you move to a new place.
Yeah. And
Jay, I have good news for you.
What?
It's probably not too late to file those taxes. No. It depends. We'll learn a bit more about all of that in this episode. And today is a special episode. We have a special guest, Daniel Hahnemann. He's the co-founder of Wundertax, which started in 2016 as a way to initially help students file their taxes. And now it has a big focus on expats. You can file your taxes in Germany, all in English. No need to learn any German tax vocabulary. And this podcast episode is sponsored by Wundertax. You can actually try it out for free and see what the amount of your tax return would be if you file it. And then if you do file it, you get a €5 discount on the app if you sign up through our link, moving.wundertax.de. And you'll find that link in the show notes. And now, without further ado, our conversation with Daniel Hahnemann. Two things are certain in life. Death and taxes is what they say. Can this topic be fun, or is it just always... Does everybody hate talking about this topic? You have to talk about it all the time, then.
I have to talk about it all the time.
You chose this as your life.
Well, can taxes be fun? Solving taxes can be fun. Getting a bigger refund than you expected can be fun.
That's true.
Paying your taxes.
Nah, not that fun, but enjoying the Friday evening beer after you submitted your tax return.
That can be fun.
It tastes so much better afterwards. Yeah. But no, it is like I'm not gonna, embellish it. Yeah. Right? Taxes are pretty dry. But I think that's what makes it fun for us, because taxes are so awful and people always are, you're the coolest at the party if you're saying like I'm a tax professional.
It's true.
But like,
people have questions.
People it's a problem we solve, right? Like people are super happy once it's done. They're really thankful. Like just today we got two like compliments to the customer support team who are like, oh my god, you guys saved me. Uh-huh. So we get those compliments, people are happy, and that's what makes it fun.
Also, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the German tax system and how it all works, I just want to say that I do enjoy paying taxes. I do enjoy living in a society that has roads and hospitals and schools, and people are like, I hate paying taxes, but I mean, obviously there's a lot of waste and like inefficiencies, and a lot of things are not going well. But I would rather live in this society than in a society where it's just everybody fights for themselves and there's like no public infrastructure. You said it. I didn't say it.
I like the idea of paying taxes.
The meta.
I'm all for that. I am still just taken aback whenever I receive, the
bill.
the paycheck. I'm like, my salary was this, but this is what I'm getting. But I think on principle, it makes sense. I'm all for having healthcare.
That's a whole different discussion. Yes. Okay, well, we explained a little bit who our audience is to you, Daniel. A lot of people new to Germany, new to Berlin, planning to move here. Can you give us like a high level overview of the German tax system? How does it work?
Sure. Well, as in every other country, the tax system taxes are the primary source of income for the government. It's the same in Germany. And Germany has one, with the difference being Germany has one of the proven most complicated tax systems worldwide. They're taxes, like, and complications, subsidies, deductions, blah blah blah, for everything, like, and exceptions, what have you. The German tax system, the largest source of income is income tax, with about 26%, and about 20-ish% is VAT. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, the huge long tail of other taxes. So income tax, what you get deducted every month, you have the privilege of getting deducted.
That's true, yes, yes.
is the largest source of income for Germany, for the German government.
And you mentioned this, in Germany, the income tax gets deducted every month from your paycheck if you're employed, whereas in some other countries, in Switzerland, for example, you just get your salary with nothing deducted, and then once per year you have to pay a big check.
Which is wild to me. Like my dad's from the border of Switzerland, and when I talk to people about that, they're like, "Oh yeah, no, we have to save, and we don't know what we have to pay." Like and a lot of the, because it's done by a canton, by canton, basically some of them are not digitalized, so they still have to hand it in by paper. So it's really like a shot in the dark for them.
I would rather actually have it deducted each month than have like a bill at the end of the year that's like, oh shit.
So, but like in Germany, how it works for most people is if you get employed, every month the Lohnbüro, the salary, the payroll office, they actually deduct a certain amount from your taxes, from your salary. And how it works is they say, okay, let's say this month you get 3,000 euros gross. On a yearly basis, they take it times 12 and apply the percentage, and that's what you have to pay. Divide that by 12, and then you get the taxes deducted.
But it's an estimation, essentially. It's not exactly the actual taxes. They're estimating this is what you're going to owe us at the end of the year, and we're going to deduct 1/12 of that. But in the end, we might be wrong. We don't know.
Exactly. So let's say you actually, you know, you earn, you quit your job and then you only work 10 months in the year. So actually your income wasn't 36,000, it was 30,000. So you actually only pay taxes on the 30,000. But because during the year, the first, you know, 10 months, you got deducted as if you would earn 36,000 for the year. The government actually owes you money, right? Because initially throughout the year, they deducted too much. So that's where the tax return comes into play.
We love that.
And even if you did work the whole year, because there's so many things you can deduct from your taxes, most people who are just employed, air quotes, get money back, right? Like very few people have to actually pay more money at the end of the year.
So let's put it this way. If you didn't have anything crazy, you live close to work, you didn't move, you worked 12 months, your salary didn't fluctuate or anything. Basically, you have the most vanilla life, the most vanilla year.
Nope, judgment.
You wouldn't get anything back. But the thing is, there are so many different types of deductions that normally you always get something back. So
if you donate, for example, I donate to various charities and you can deduct that from your taxes.
You can deduct that from your taxes. You need the invoice though. Mm-hmm. But for instance, also, if you live in a large apartment complex, every tenant gets like a bill at the end of the year, right? With the Nebenkostenabrechnung, Betriebskostenabrechnung, where like stuff,
the
you know,
cleaning,
the repairs,
the garbage, the
everything's
repairs
listed. If you live in a single house, rent that one, like there's not going to be that much, right? But if you live in like an apartment complex, all the handiwork that was done or the cleaning of the household, of the common areas, etc., those are all tax deductible. So if you live, even if you just live in a large apartment complex, you also get money back from the government because that's deductible. And it's, I mean, to get into the nitty gritty, it's 20% up until amount of 1,200 of the cost. So that's deductible. And I guess, if you take up the sum of the parts, like basically everybody should do a tax return, and it's not that much work. Even if you see, okay, I don't get anything back, then just don't submit it, right?
So okay, this is a good point. We're now in the topic of taxation for employees, right? Like if you just have a job, you get a paycheck, you get the taxes deducted every month. You just said everybody should do it, even if you don't file it. So it's optional to do your taxes.
Well, it's optional except for the ones for who it is. It's not.
Except for when it isn't.
Except for when it isn't, right? In principle, so there are quite a lot of reasons why you have to do it. So, but the most obvious one is if you owe money, which is if you're a freelancer.
Okay, we'll keep the freelancers to the next section. Yeah. So if I'm not a freelancer, I'm just an employee at a company, do I have to file my taxes?
There are cases, yeah. There are cases such as, if you had side income, if you had a side hustle, if last year you had a negative, if you received certain governmental subsidies, what else? The most common reason is if the government asks you to.
Oh.
Like that happens.
You get a letter.
You get a letter and they're just like, we don't have a reason. We just want to check. Okay. Like that happens a lot. Like I got that this year. Huh. For
funny enough, I
exactly. just happened to have an app for yeah. this. So it's okay. Yeah. Really okay. Don't worry. I got this.
Exactly. So, no, but like it happens. Like people just the government, the tax office just asks you, and that is I think that is probably one of the most common reasons why you have to do one.
Okay. But like generally, like, let's say if you like just moved here and you've been here for like a year and you don't really know like the systems, you're not like there's no like fear, oh shit, I didn't do my taxes for this past year or whatnot, asking for a friend. Like, no one's gonna be like knocking on my door or their door.
No, you will definitely get a letter.
Okay.
You'll definitely get a letter
if you need to do it. But that's the other thing. You should do it and you still can do it because you can do it up to 4 years. Because I'm not naming any names here, but I have a good friend and we used to live together and we made a deal once where she cleaned the apartment. We were sharing an apartment and I filed her tax returns for the past 4 years because she hadn't done it. She got so much money back. It was really worth it.
Was she a student?
Or? Yeah, no, she was already working.
Okay, because if you're a student, actually, you can go back 7 years.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So the 3 extra years are to basically identify if you had a loss. So this is a whole different topic.
Why? Okay, let's go there though. Why should I do my taxes as a student if I don't have an income, if I'm just studying?
Well, that is the classic question. We started like that. So what we did was when we were studying, my co-founder and me, in Germany you have these seminars by these guys in suits that sound super serious, but at the end of the day they just show slides that you should do a tax return as a student, but they don't tell you how. So what they tell you is, so what tax break exists is you can actually deduct like all the costs that you had as a student from basically zero. You can say it's a loss. I made negative income. And it gets massive. If you do an internship away from your hometown, you can, don't quote me on the number, but you can up to 90 days subtract you can subtract about, I think it was 20 euros per day for 90 days. So if you do an exchange semester in London, it was like, it's like 60 euros per day. So it's like it's a ruling that you use that was made for people who go on business trips. If you have like an interview abroad or something, or in a different town, that you can deduct that from your taxes, but you can also do it for your exchange semester, for your internship, et cetera, et cetera. So you can deduct all those crazy taxes, all those crazy costs from basically zero income, and you have a loss. And that loss is a loss carry forward that you can then apply when you start working.
So basically, philosophically, the government views studying at university as part of your job that you don't have yet. So you don't have the job yet, you're not making any money, but you're doing this in order to be able to get a job and make money, which you will pay income tax on. Like, and so that's why the studies itself are tax deductible.
Now, here's another but. There was a ruling by the higher court that it only accounts if it's a second study. That's the wording.
Uh-huh.
So if it's a master's, or if you did an apprenticeship before your bachelor's, or if it's a second bachelor's. Because they're saying like everything that you did in your first studies was all fun and games.
That was explorative. Doesn't count.
You were just testing.
So I studied.
No, you're not going to go.
I mean, you're laughing, but that's literally what the court decided. The court decided it was just like an exploratory phase, and the second studies are the ones that are actually
that's the serious stuff.
This says so much about Germany. Yeah. You know, it's like, no. Don't you can't just go study once. That's really not enough. You gotta go twice.
Like, I believe that so much that they would make that ruling.
Okay. Anything else we should know about
students? I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, with the student tax return is one of the craziest tax breaks you can get. Because most students are like, oh, I don't know, I didn't pay anything, right? But it actually, like, if you go through the formula, the form. Massive deductibles.
It doesn't feel urgent because you're not going to get that money back right away. It's not like you have minus zero negative income and then they just give you money. It basically gets put on hold. And then once you actually start working, you get that money back.
You have to do a tax return once you start working.
Right. And then you get
you have to because you have a loss carry forward. If you have a loss carry forward, you have to do your tax return. Mm-hmm. But because, like, let's say you deduct your master's abroad, like, it can go into the tens of thousands of euros, right? And then you start working. Let's take that 30,000 euro, the 30,000 euro income. You deduct 10,000 euro. You only have to pay taxes on basis of 20,000. You basically get half of all the paid taxes back. It's massive. It's in the first year.
By the way, now a quick interlude before we go into like freelancers and stuff. It took me a long time to understand the concept of what's deductible.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say a long time, I mean, I was like 20 or something, but I had already heard about taxes and deducting stuff from your taxes.
Yeah.
The way it works, when you can deduct something, you know, for example, a charitable contribution or your shoes that you bought for your work, the way it works is you earn a certain amount, you earn 30,000 euros per year, and now the charitable contributions were 1,000. It's not that you have to pay 1,000 euros less in taxes. Yeah. It's that you deduct them, and that means now your actual income wasn't 30,000, it was 29,000.
Your taxable income.
Taxable income. And so you owe fewer taxes because your real income was lower because the charitable contribution or the shoes or whatever doesn't actually count as income. And that's how that works. It took me a long time. It's very simple, obviously, and everybody probably knows this, but it took me a while. So I just wanted
to... I couldn't have said it better.
All right.
That was spot on. There are different, like, just to add something, maybe for listeners, a rule of thumb is if you spent money to get income, so basically the shoes are a great example. If you spent money to get income, that's normally tax deductible. So if you go for an interview and had to, you know, like travel to there, that's definitely like a suit and a tie. There's a ruling for that. But if you had to have like a special uniform that you had to buy for the job, if you
buy a laptop or something.
Pilots can actually deduct their Ray-Bans, their aviators. I'm not joking.
Yeah. So you really have to be open to this idea and really like keep it front of mind. Because also, if you apply for jobs, the postage, the kind of in Germany, I don't know if this is still a thing, but when I was young and applying for jobs, it wasn't digital. You sent these maps, super expensive 5 euro kind of folders, and those you can deduct. The postage, books that you're reading about applying to a job or about the job, anything that you do because the end goal is to make money is deductible.
Exactly.
And also, it's not illegal to try. Like, you can say, hey, this book was really fun to read, but it also has to do with what I want to do for work. Mm-hmm. Put it on your tax returns. They can still say no.
So, and that's the main thing. Like, the tax office is never going to be like, oh, you tried to deduct that book? Oh, you're gonna have to pay.
You're going to jail.
You're going to go straight to jail. Like, that's never going to happen. Like, that's what a lot of our users are afraid of. They're like, oh my God. Like, I mean... One expat they renovated their kitchen. And for things like that, you're actually, what I just said, you're allowed to deduct. This is not to get an income, to get a job, but like to make money. This is the Haushaltsnahe Dienstleistung. So jobs in your house or close to your house.
If you're employing someone basically to help you with your household.
Exactly.
Because that also in retrospect kind of helps you with your job, because then you don't have to deal with your household so much.
Basically. But I think the main goal is to not pay people like, you know,
black.
Yeah. Black, yeah.
Under the
so
yeah.
The thing is like what happens is what happened is he tried to deduct his whole kitchen, his IKEA kitchen, and I just wrote him back like, yeah, that's not gonna work. In general, like we don't give tax advice. Like in general, it's the cost of the handyman, the service cost that you can deduct, but not the kitchen itself, right? Like, where was I going with this?
Something unexpected happened.
Yes, something unexpected happened. He handed it in, and he was like panicky, and I was like, "Look, there's nothing's gonna happen, right? Like, you're not gonna the tax office is just gonna say no."
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, when I buy podcast microphones, just because you know, I really it's also like, where's the kind of border between you need it for your job and you want it for your job.
Yeah.
Like arguably when you're a podcaster, one mic is enough, but maybe you're trying more mics because you want to try and 2. See which 0. One is back. You can put those on your tax return. At some point, the tax office might call you and ask like, what are you using all these microphones for? Or they might just decide, look, you know, 5 mics is enough. They can make those decisions. But as long as you're not lying, as long as you did purchase these things and you are using them for your job, you can put them on your tax returns.
Yeah.
You can argue with them.
Exactly.
You know? So, okay.
Yeah.
So now, with that out of the way, freelancers.
Yep.
I feel like as long as you're an employee, it's all easy and you do it once per year and it takes 17 minutes is your slogan, is like what you advertise. It's pretty quick if you have an app like Wundertux. But if you're a freelancer, things get a little more complicated.
Basically, yeah. I mean, if you're a freelancer, it goes much more into business taxes and accounting software or accounting practices. So it does get more complicated, definitely. I think one of the starting points is actually to decide if you are a business, or which is called a Gewerbe, or if you are a freelancer, a Freiberufler, so selbstständig.
Which is not something that you can decide. Like, if in doubt, like the default, let's say, is Gewerbe, is business. There are some specific professions which can be Freiberufler,
exactly,
freelancer, and you can ask them to essentially put you in that drawer, and they may say yes or no. And actually, like, I just made this experience because I'm employed, but I was also developing a podcasting course.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the Anmeldung. I registered with the Finanzamt, telling them, look, I'm now starting this new business. I'm making an online course. And I said, great, here's your Steuernummer, your tax ID, and you are now a Gewerbe, a business.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be a Gewerbe business because it gets more complicated. It's easier to be a freelancer, Freiberufler. And I argued to them that since I'm teaching this, mm-hmm. it's really an educator type of role, and teachers can be Freiberufler. Like, it's possible to do it if it's an educational activity. And I was on the phone with them, and they were like, well, did you study this? Because not everybody can just claim that they're teaching something. But if you studied this, then it's okay. And I was like,
I took a YouTube course.
No, I did study this. I studied media production, including courses on podcasting. And they were like, well, can you send me your bachelor degree? And I was like, I sure can. I sent it and they changed it. And so another learning that I made in the topic of taxes is the Finanzämter, of all the Ämter, they're super approachable. Like you can email them, you can call them, and they are not your enemy. It's not like the Ausländerbehörde where it sometimes feel like they're trying to fight you. Like they want something from you. Like they want your money and they're happy to like answer questions, or you know, if you're not sure, like don't lie to them. Ask them what the right thing to do is.
I mean, basically, I would agree to you insofar if your tax office is not in Berlin, because they're really overworked.
Overworked. But still, I've had pleasant phone calls.
They're super approachable. Like, I mean, sometimes you can hear that they're stressed. Like, if you're on the countryside, they like chat with you and talk about the weather and everything. But like, no, in general, they're not your enemy. They're definitely very approachable. They're super nice. If you have questions about your tax return, your refund, your what's the status, they're all really happy to answer these questions. Like, I've never had a bad experience in terms of like approachability or rudeness or anything.
Okay, so you register as either a Gewerbe business or Freiberufler, freelancer.
Exactly.
And so then you can, what happens?
I mean, you can just a quick word to the Freiberufler. Like, I mean, you have to look up like what you are. You can then try to get it, or like what you did, call them. But yeah, the standard is normally Gewerbe, that you are doing a business. If you are, like, I mean, also kind of rule of thumb, if you're selling things, then you're probably a Gewerbe. Like, if you're a consultant, for instance, and you studied business, then you're definitely, you know, then you can definitely go for like Selbstständigkeit or Freiberufler. So, like...
Well, like a service versus like a product.
Exactly. Teaching. Yeah. Teaching versus selling a course. That's kind of like the rule of thumb.
Gotcha.
So if you want to go for a Gewerbe, or if you have to go for a Gewerbe, you have to register a business, basically. Gewerbe Anmeldung. So you have to register, and then you get the your Gewerbenummer, and then you get a tax ID, etc., etc., and you basically have a new legal entity, right? It's still connected to you. It's not a company like a UG or a GmbH, but it's a business connected to your personal tax income or your personal tax return. Why would you want to have the Selbstständigkeit, or why did you want to have it?
Freiberufler. From what I heard, it's because you only have to do your taxes once per year, and you basically have to submit a very simple table of all the income and all the expenses. So I earned this on this day, this on this day. Like, I wrote 6 invoices, and I bought this microphone and this blackboard, and then you subtract those 2 things from each other, and whatever is left is your profit or loss. And that's all they want to know. They want to see that table, and they want to know, did you make a profit or did you make a loss? And that's it.
It's not that much different with Gewerbe, but you have to pay extra taxes, and there are more steps. So you have to actually register your Gewerbe, but then you also have to pay extra taxes, which is the Gewerbesteuer, which means you also have to do an extra form, which is the Gewerbesteuererklärung. And then there are some other, like, you know, admin stuff you also have to do on top of that. So it's definitely easier to be, you know, a Freiberufler, a freelancer in that sense.
Maybe this is already really getting into the nitty gritty, but there's something called Kleinunternehmerregelung.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that is about?
So you have to normally charge VAT, right? Like, if you buy a product, if you buy a service, you normally pay VAT. But if you are a Kleinunternehmer, which literally means, you know, small entrepreneur, what happens is you can actually write an invoice without VAT, because it makes everything much easier. When can you do that? Is if you have under 22,000 euros of yearly income through your Gewerbe or your Selbstständigkeit. So you don't have to actually, you don't have to charge this 19% VAT. And how you can, like, and in the second year, if you have, if you think you're going to get 50,000, then you can, or not more than 50,000, you can stay a Kleinunternehmer. Yeah. So, but if you are going to, in the second year, if you're going to go over the 22,000, so if you say, like, okay, I'm going to be under 50,000, but I'm not sure my business is going to go, I'm not sure how my business is going to go, and you're going to, in the second year, you get 23,000, Then in the third year, you definitely have to start charging VAT. Yeah. And that's where stuff gets complicated, because then you have to also do a Umsatzsteuer Voranmeldung.
Yeah.
Which is basically, you have to tell the, during the year, you have to tell the tax office how much you made in, and this is, you have no control over it. The tax office tells you how often you have to pay VAT. Uh-huh. It could be monthly, it can be quarterly, it can be a half year, yearly. Yeah. So basically you have to then do that extra admin step as well. So if you have under 22,000, it's still not easy breezy. You don't have to do a VAT. You can
just write an invoice and say, hey, I'm charging you 100 euros and there's no VAT included because I don't owe tax. There's a little text snippet that you have to put on your invoices to clarify there's no VAT involved here.
Yeah.
And so it's easier. I feel like this whole segment sounds very scary. What would you say to people who are like, hey, I'm a freelancer, I'm an artist. There's also this special thing about Berlin. There's the freelance artists visa. So like, what would you say to people who want to come to Berlin, be an artist, make money by selling their art, you know, maybe people have lots of ideas.
Yeah.
It sounds scary.
It does sound scary. And I think it's each individual has to kind of decide for themselves how they want to do it. If I think everyone who's below 22,000 is like, it's not that hard. It sounds much scarier than it is. Right. So if you're just starting out, you're expecting to get under 22,000 euros in income, like you can do it yourself. Like it's not that hard. It's more daunting than it seems.
Yeah.
Than it actually
the other way
is.
Around.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
It seems more daunting. That was a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
It is daunting.
No, it is daunting, but like you can do it.
Okay.
Once you get into that whole, you know, VAT stuff, then you have to kind of decide for yourself how comfortable you are with it, right? Like there's still the option of going to a tax advisor who, you know, you can every month, every quarter, you just give a shoebox of invoices and they do it for you. That is an option. It will cost you more money.
And from what I hear, it's really difficult to find tax advisors these days.
It is difficult to find a tax advisor these days, but...
why is that? No more people choosing to study to become tax advisors?
That's exactly it.
Really?
No, that's exactly it. It's actually quite hard to become a tax advisor in Germany because there's a special exam for it, which is not easy. You have to know like all the laws and everything. You have to be able to quote them, etc. So it's a thing in Germany. Tax advice, like tax, you could even call it a tax lawyer. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, I think registered. I think as like a freelance, and I have the kleine und mehr.
Kleinunternehmerregelung.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
That one. It was actually very easy to do. Like, I just filled out something online. I sent it to the Verhamnezeigen.
To whom?
Where are they called? The people.
Finanzamt.
Yeah, Finanzamt. I sent it to them and I got my like thing back. And yeah, it was a very easy process to do.
Yeah.
So it's not as difficult as, like, I was scared as well, but it actually is very easy.
Yeah. I mean, the VAT is not. It's not crazy difficult either, but it just it gets more into that whole accounting thing. And you know, the example of the freelance artist visa, like I can imagine that they have better things to do than accounting, right? Like so, I mean, essentially, it's easy for me to say, but I do think like it seems very scary, but like once you get into it a little bit, it's not that hard, and you can always, you know, like you need to probably know German for calling the Finanzamt.
It's not that hard to find a friend.
Find a friend who will ask for you. Yeah. But like,
Okay. So apart from, making use of a Steuerberater, if you do it yourself, can you still do it in paper form? My mom always did her taxes on paper. I don't think that's even allowed anymore.
It's very discouraged.
Yeah. Very discouraged.
It's very discouraged.
They do still have the forms at the Finanzamt, like near the entrance. But I think there's like, it's, you know, if you've done it, if you're 80 years old and you've done it your whole life that way, maybe they allow it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I have an uncle who was very proud of the fact that he was still able to do it by paper, but he's also, yeah, he's special. So, like, you have to, you know, jump through hoops to get the tax forms. Like, they don't send them by post to you anymore, for instance. So they strongly discourage it because for obvious reasons, right? They don't want to, it's just easier for them.
But then the kicker is you can do it online and it's called Elster.
Yeah.
That's the name of the official website where you can file your taxes. But the official website is really just the print, like the form. It's as if they scanned the forms and they're like, all right, here's the form.
We're progressive.
It's not very, I mean, it's great that you can do it online, but they're not helping you. Like they're not in the business of explaining things to you or guiding you through it or telling you this is relevant for you or this isn't.
No.
It's just all the forms in digital form.
Yeah.
And so that's where your company and a few others obviously decided, hey, let's make this easier.
Exactly. That's the idea. So
tell us about Wundertax. How does it start? Like, how does it work?
So basically, I was telling you about the student, you know, the student times where the guys are trying to sell you insurances. So they tell you how to do that you can do a student tax return, but they don't tell you how to do it. So fast forward a few years, of course, I knew about the 7 years back, so I didn't do the tax return. So once I actually started like working and tried to do the first tax return, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, like Elster is, well, that was bad experience. And basically, me and a classmate from university, we actually were thinking, okay, why can't we like build a better UX, a better user experience for students? Because even if you looked at all the tax softwares that were, all the commercial tax softwares that were helping, you know, with the user experience, none of them had one that was tailored to students. So what we did is we launched Studentensteuererklärung. It's a big mouth. It's a mouthful, right? But
very focused at expats who couldn't pronounce the name.
But those, so that was, I mean, that was in the Facebook era, right? Like we started posting, like, hey, we built this tool. We started posting this in Facebook groups, and it went completely viral. And it was fantastic. The numbers were fantastic because all the students, they've all heard of it, right? Because of those said insurance agents, but none of them actually did it. Mm-hmm. So it went really viral. We had great user numbers, and then we were like thinking, huh, this, you know, target group approach, this target group strategy, that it kind of worked. So we rolled out, you know, a tool for police officers, for soldiers, we did teachers. But then at some point when we did engineers tax return, the engineers were like, why is there a special tool for this? So we rolled out, you know, just the generic one. Of course we translated it into English, and the generic one was the one that really took off, and then we were like, okay, we kind of need a name now. So we Studentensteuererklärung doesn't cover it. So we did Wundertax, and, got some investment in, we scaled it up, and yeah, now we're helping hundreds of thousands of people getting their tax refund back.
And so basically it's, how does it differ from Elster? It's also online. You can do it on your phone. Maybe that's one of the differences, but you can also do it on the browser, on the web.
Yeah.
And
so actually this is an interesting, we just had that discussion, before coming here, we started with a web application because we were always like, nah, like taxes, you know, that's serious stuff. I'm not going to use my small screen. I'm going to use my big screen, right? Like to do my taxes. And it's interesting because if I meet people, and tell them about that I do a Wundertax, they're all like, oh, cool. Like 20% or something have, or 10 to 20% have used it even. Mm-hmm. We do not have 20% market penetration. Like that we would be huge if we had that, right? But what I noticed was we kind of built it for our bubble, right? Mm-hmm. Like we built it for our needs. And I do serious stuff like reading a contract or tax returns. I do it on my laptop. Mm-hmm. So we were always like, okay, laptop, our web application is more important. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, like, you know, if you look...
You can read a contract on your phone.
Yeah, if you look at Gen Z, they do everything. Like a lot of people don't even have a laptop anymore. Hmm. They only have their work computer or something, mm-hmm. you know. But like, so we have an app. I would recommend our web app. In, let's say, 2 months, we're relaunching the app. So that's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. But basically... that was a bit of an anecdote, but to get back to your question, why you should use WunderTax and not Elster is basically because you said it yourself. Elster is just the paper forms, put it online, and you have to click through everything to find your. You know, it's a kind of a Where's Waldo with your which of these cells is actually applicable to
me. Yeah.
With our tool, it's more like, okay, we show you in easy language. You start off by saying, okay, this is my name. Yes, I can do that. you type in your tax ID, you type in, you know, just your basics, your address, etc. And then you go into your income, you just, you know, copy what you got from your payroll office. And then we do things in natural language, right? Like one tax deductible is the commute to your work. And we have a Google Maps integration. So you just type, in the first step, you typed in your address, right? And in the second step, the third step, you type in the address of your work. And then it just shows you the distance in kilometers. In Elster, you have to type in, you know, your... like, how much was that? 30 cents per kilometer up until 20 kilometers times the number of kilometers. If you had over 20 kilometers, it's 37. Don't quote me on that. But like, and we do all the calculations behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. You don't, at the end of the process, you type in all the stuff. And at the end of the process, you get the tax form, the complete tax form that we're going to submit to the tax office. And then you can see all the calculations that we did behind the scenes.
And while you're doing all this, there's a little ticker in the upper left corner that shows you, hey, this is how much money you're going to get back.
Exactly.
And so that's a nice little motivator to keep going.
Yeah. And you don't have to wait for the letter from Elster, the activation letter. Mm-hmm. You can just do. So we actually use Elster as well.
How accurate is that prediction though of how much money you get back? Because you can't really decide, like the Finanzamt is going to make that decision.
Yeah.
It's an estimate, obviously.
It's an estimate. It's pretty accurate already. The only thing is though that we can't predict what is wrong,
right?
You know, like the example of the guy with the kitchen, right? Like obviously he had a huge refund because like our calculator thought the kitchen is going to be accepted, mm-hmm. but our calculator doesn't know that it won't be accepted.
Yeah.
So the calculator and the tool itself, it does check for mistakes. It does check for illogical stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like we had one case where somebody was super pissed because we showed him a huge refund. And then he said like, yeah, you overpromised. And then we actually looked at the case because, hey, like we're not perfect. We there could be mistakes in there, but like that person deducted their holiday, you know, their flight home from their taxes, and it was just like, okay, well, yeah, obviously it's wrong.
Verification. Yeah. And so, how do you make money? How does it work?
At the end of the process, it's actually very simple. We take a fee, a fixed fee of 34.99 euros. And then you can submit your tax return. So the thing is, like, you can fill out everything already and you can see your potential refund, and then you get into the payment page to activate the sending of the tax return.
Yeah, that's important to point out. You can try this out and just do it and you don't have to pay anything. And then at the very end, if you decide, hey, it says I'm going to get back 1,000 euros, I'm going to do this, you submit.
Yeah.
That's when you ask for a fee, which if you sign up through our URL, moving.com wundertags.de. It'll be in the show notes. You get a €5 discount.
Exactly.
Nice.
So to wrap up, can we talk about the future of taxes? Like, why does it have to be so complicated? Can't we just do like a flat fee on every, I don't know. It feels so ridiculously complicated. Can't we just get rid of the whole system? I mean, I know it would destroy your business. Maybe you're the wrong person to talk to. But
No, I completely, like, it's a very philosophical question, right? Like, I think, I mean, there's, for instance, right now, there's this, I haven't been following it actively anymore, but in Germany, we have a lot of tax classes. So depending on if you, you know, you have a child.
We didn't mention that. Can you explain what are tax classes?
Sure. So basically with the tax classes, it really depends on your situation, if you're married, if you have children, etc. But there's actually one tax class where you can choose, which is the tax class 4 and the tax class 3 plus 5. So 3 plus 5 is if you have... if one spouse works and the other doesn't or has a much lower salary, you can do 3 plus 5. And then there's also tax class 4, which is just where both people have tax class 4. So without getting into the details, the mechanisms are just different. But essentially, you can choose whatever is better for you. And that is debated right now to get rid of. So because...
It adds so much complexity.
It adds so much complexity.
It doesn't really make a difference in the end, right? It kind of changes how much money the government deducts each month. And so if you choose a combination of 3 and 5, if one person earns more than the other, you may have fewer deductions throughout the year. But then in the end, when you do your taxes, it should all equal out anyway. It doesn't really change how much money you owe the government. Mm-hmm. Really, yeah, that exactly. choice, like you shouldn't stress too much about that choice, I feel like, because it doesn't, it's not like you actually lose money in the long run.
I mean, there are edge cases where it's like an extreme difference. Mm-hmm. Like if, you know, somebody earns 200,000 and the other person has a mini job. But like, essentially, then it does make a difference when choosing. But like, essentially, it just adds another layer of complexity. Mm-hmm. Out of 6 plus the tax class 0, but like out of 7 tax classes to have like, you know, 2 or 3 of them basically doing the same thing, right? So there are, you know, like efforts to simplify the tax system. There definitely are by the government because they also know how complex it is. But there is a certain, like I always say, there's a certain beauty to the German tax system. It is very complicated, yes, but the German tax system also allows a lot of things to be incentivized or disincentivized. For instance, when I lived in Amsterdam, the tax return was in the Netherlands was super easy, right? You just everything's pre-filled, you just hand it in, you're done. But
beautiful.
Because there are not that many deductibles. Mm-hmm. But like in Germany, my favorite example is moving. So if you move closer to your work to your employer, you can deduct that move from your taxes. So the government actively incentivizes you to move closer to your mm-hmm. to your workplace. That is not possible. There's no mechanism for that in the Dutch tax system, mm-hmm. For instance. Problem, of course, is the German tax legislation is extremely badly taught and badly communicated. So everyone's like, after they've moved, they're like, huh, cool, I can actually deduct this. This is great. Like, yeah, I get the money back. But nobody actually does that, like, preemptively.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody's like, oh, maybe I should move to my employer because I get subsidized, right? So the mechanism, the beauty of it is, like, there's a lot of things that can be influenced. Mm. It's a tool by the government to influence to incentivize certain things or disincentivize, such as, you know, smoking. There are huge taxes on that. But there are efforts to simplify it. I think also like technological advancement will be a big lever. I mean, we're already a huge improvement to the whole paper and the whole ELSTA thing. But I think in the future, it's going to be very interesting, especially if you think about, I don't think there's going to be ever like an AI tax return where you know,
that you can trust at least. I mean, it probably already exists, but you should take it with a grain of salt shaker. Yeah.
No, just as an example, like, I mean, the move as an example, even if it could read your bank statement and they see, oh, okay, you transferred money to a moving company, like, you don't know if it's actually tax deductible because you don't know if you're moving. So I don't think that kind of AI tax return will ever work, but there will definitely be a lot of AI enablement for, mm-hmm. you know, tax advisors. Ideally for the people working at the tax office to be like, okay.
To make it easier for them, but not, yeah.
Exactly. Like the whole processing.
Yeah.
The other thing I do think could make how to make it easier for you know, the consumer is, I think there will be at some point like an integrated tax return kind of thing. So if you buy like a laptop from MediaMarkt or something, there will be like a pop-up saying like, oh, you bought a.
Is this for work?
Is this for work? Yes or no? And then it gets automatically into, like, that's what I mean with integration. Mm-hmm. There's like a data sharing mm-hmm. that you can send it over to your tax software mm-hmm. and then it gets saved during the year. At the end of the year, I kind of already do that.
Like whenever I buy something, I don't do it for Amazon because on Amazon it's really easy to just go back through the whole year and look at what you bought. But everything else that I buy, if it's for work, I put in a special folder that's already named Steuer 2023, yeah. and then I don't forget about it.
Exactly. Smart. But just imagine that Amazon, you know, those Amazon purchases get automatically categorized mm-hmm. into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it happens a lot for business, but because like invoice recognition works quite well already, mm-hmm. but for the private person, that doesn't exist yet. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, progress to be made. Yeah.
And I have one question about, so let's say that I am like a private person wanting to do things on the tax app. Are there any like resources out there that like can like help educate people like on the process as they're going through it? Cause I mean, they might still have questions and stuff as they're using it, but like, what would you recommend?
To read up on it? Yeah. I mean, we have a blog where we actually also try to, you know, make it a bit more understandable. Every year we bring out a PDF saying like, okay, this is the new tax guide for this year. Now we try to make it more entertaining because we're still talking about taxes. Like nobody's going to be like
we're making taxes funny.
Yeah. They're lazy Sunday reading the tax guide. Right. But all in all, I mean, follow us on our socials. There are always like little infographics where we're like, okay, we're trying to keep people up to date about, you know, last year there was the Energie Pauschale where everyone got 300 euros. I don't know, this year, for instance, if you turn 18 this year, you get a 100 euro voucher for cinema, for theater, etc. We try to, you know, like educate people a bit more about these financial topics mm-hmm. and the changes that happen in the tax world or just, you know.
Yeah.
These admin stuff. Yeah. So we try to make it more palpable. We post it on these things on TikTok, on Instagram, everything. Yeah. I think financial education is super important. And I think everyone should, you know, follow it more. Just look out for yourself. And it doesn't have to be boring, right? It doesn't,
you don't
have to study it.
As you demonstrated by joining us here today. Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.